Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on government intrusion upon liberty and individual rights when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious by now that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, they're banned from our public institutions, and now they've been banned from our public consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they're teaching these ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, in our public institutions. We have now made them a part of our national psyche. And you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware, for instance, your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal Constitution. Now, there is at least one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that we all receive for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what the penalty to a law is to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, it's an automatic process. It's an automatic law. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package first. That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and it's free. If you're online, you can download it right off of our website. If you're not online, then why don't you call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967, and just ask for it, and we'll send you one. That number again, area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the right page, and then you can download that free General Law CD package direct. All right, we were talking about this book that we're reviewing here, which is called The Strategic Relocation. The section in here that I'm reviewing is Government Intrusion on Our Liberties and Individual Rights. And I asked the question, I said, what can we expect over the next 5 or 10 years, 5 years or so? And I think we can expect more and higher taxes, more and greater regulation, more socialism, more transfer of our wealth to other people, an invasion of our privacy, a taking of our guns, more and more licensing, health care initiatives jammed down our throat or up our hind ends, whichever end you want to put it in, the taking away of midwives, the abandoning or the outlawing of homeschooling, and so on, just as a partial list of the kinds of government activities that we can expect from a tyrannical government. Joel Skousen, in his section on threat analysis, takes a look at the Kennedy assassination, which we looked at last time. 13 contradictions. That doesn't happen by accident. That is directed. That's intentional. But he's got another section in here that talks about this thing of the World Trade Center. And so I started on that one last time, and I wanted to share with you these official claims by the government and then the contradictions. And then let's ask ourselves, well, can these contradictions in this Trade Tower event have happened accidentally? Just, you know, by caprice. So I mentioned to you last time, I said, you know, if something happens, we say, well, that's an accident. And if something happens twice, we say, well, that's a coincidence. But when it happens three times, we say that's a design, that's a plan. When it happens 10 or 12 or 15 times, then you know without a doubt that it's a plan. You can't throw 12 buttons out of a moving automobile and have them fall in a predictable pattern, three wide, four long, equal distance apart. Now, statistically, if you did that, you could say that'll happen once every 33 trillion events. That's the statistical odds. If something happens six times, like you pick six numbers out of 100 in the lottery, that happens once every 83 million times. Now, if you won the lottery, you would be winning it one out of 83 million. If you did that twice, I don't know what the number would be, but boy, it's going to be big. If you won that three times in a row, we would say you are being given the winning numbers, without a doubt. It ain't going to happen three times in a row. So by the time you win 13 lotteries in a row, and then we say, well, it just happened that way. Old Bob is really lucky. He's won the lottery 13 times in a row. Boy, does he know how to pick numbers. You bet he does. Boy, that's a boy that knows how to pick numbers. Now, come on, guys. Let's wake up and smell the coffee here. Taking a look at the trade towers from Joel Skousen's point of view. This is a fellow conspiracy theorist now. And I said, let's get the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence. Now, here's what we're going to do. We're going to name names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence. And we're going to put this together, and we're going to ask you, what? You believe this all happened accidentally? All right, here's the official version. The official claim from government is, the government officials had no prior warning or knowledge of the events and no way to predict them. Here are the contradictions. There had been warnings from the Philippine officials about Project Bojinka, in which Bin Laden associates were undergoing flight training in the United States and planning to crash hijacked airliners into the Pentagon and New York's World Trade Center. Similar warnings were relayed after the 1988 embassy bombings in Kenya. Boy, that's a story. From 1988 on, somebody said they're going to crash airliners into buildings. When I saw that happen, I couldn't believe my eyeballs. I had never imagined, I could never have thought of something that evil. Somebody would deliberately crash an airplane into a building with people in it? All right. Well, that idea had been floated as early as 1988. Now, what kind of people do we have working for us in our military that conceives of such evil? I mean, maybe we need them. You know, maybe you have to have some real evil people in order to conceive of the evil consequences of our evil enemies. But I don't think that the average Joe Sixpack could even envision that kind of evil. There is an evil coming up, though, that is described in the book of Revelation called pestilence. I'm going to pass this on here just while I'm thinking about it. There was a guy here not too long ago, two or three years ago. He went over to Norway and he dug up a body, maybe more than one, of a victim who had died from the Spanish flu in 1918-19. Now, this Spanish flu was the most virulent pestilence that has ever struck planet Earth and humankind. Killed 100 million people, 50 million that everybody admits to, probably more than 100 million. Dug it up because these bodies in Norway are frozen. See, when you bury somebody up there in Norway back in 1918, that body doesn't decompose. It just freezes in the permafrost and just stays there. Dug it up and then thawed it out, got the virus out of it, and synthesized it in the laboratory, replicated it. Now, boys and girls, you can rest assured that the army biologic outfit in Bethesda, Maryland, did the same thing. And you can rest assured that the Russians and the Chinese and the Israelis have all done the same thing. So you've got governments out there with military institutions that have this 1918 flu. Now, who in his right mind would even want it? Yep, you got that one. Government. Yeah, there's governments and military institutions out there that want it. How in the hell does that benefit us? The Joe Sixpacks and Sally Housewives of the world. How does that benefit us? Now, maybe it benefits government. Maybe it benefits armies. Maybe it benefits wars and agendas. But let me tell you, killing 100 million people is not something that's going to benefit Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. All right, now with that in mind, there are people out there that are so wicked and evil in their mental processes that they can dream up, think of, and then work on these kinds of projects. It ought to boggle our minds, but maybe we've become so callous that it doesn't. Now, there were CIA front companies involved with facilitating aircraft flight training. Actually, these companies were themselves cover organizations set up by the government proxies to divert attention from where the true hijackers got their training. In my opinion, none of the listed hijackers were among those actually involved in the attacks. And several of the listed hijackers received training at U.S. military facilities prior to 9/11. And I doubt these were the real hijackers, whose identities have never been revealed. Now this is 1, 2, 3. Here comes number 4. A secret military unit codenamed Able Danger used computer data, mining techniques, uncovered a terrorist cell in Brooklyn led by alleged terrorist leader Mohammed Atta. The Pentagon later ordered the data destroyed, claiming invasion of privacy, though that wasn't or hasn't stopped them from continuing. Hey, excuse me. The president authorized the wiring and the tapping of every telephone, every communication from satellites and from internet, and did it illegally. You mean to tell me that the CIA uncovered a terrorist cell in Brooklyn and then they just said, oh, because we're violating the privacy of these people, we're going to have to destroy the information? I mean, my God, do you believe that? I mean, there's some of these things in here that a first or second grader ought to question. And that's certainly one of them. Much less adults. Of course, I don't know, I was watching Leno the other day, and he asked a young woman if she knew how many stars there were in the American flag, and he pointed to a flag waving in the breeze, and she said, no, it's moving too fast, I can't count them. I mean, there's people out there that actually vote and give answers like that. And I imagine there's probably people out here that vote and believe that this World Trade Tower deal over here was caprice, just an accident. Oh, it was a conspiracy, but it wasn't with our government. It was with a bunch of Arabs. Okay, let's take a look. There's 1, 2, 3, 4. That was number 4. Here's number 5. President Bush and Vice President Cheney received a detailed briefing on the bin Laden threat in a daily briefing in August 2001. Parenthetically, Skousen says, however, I suspect this was a red herring to make the case for government incompetence rather than direct planning. Michael Meacher, a former British Minister of the Environment, said at least 11 countries provided advance warning to U.S. intelligence agencies. This statement demonstrates the natural leakage that occurs between large U.S. black operations and allied intelligence services who still think the U.S. is against terror. And then high schools in some New York City districts told students not to go down to the World Trade Center on 9/11. Let me pause right there. It was reported after the fact, you know, high school students were told, don't go down to the World Trade Center on 9/11. Why not 9/12 or 9/13? Or why not 9/9, 9/10? Why on 9/11, the day of the attack? And where did they get the information? Who told the school board in New York City to tell students not to go down to the World Trade Center? These are facts that come out after the fact by witnesses or by communications and emails and things. And they're embarrassing for government because if true, then it shows that, hey, wait a minute, somebody knew that this was coming down before the fact. Doesn't it? I mean, come on, let's wake up and smell the coffee here. Going on, San Francisco Mayor Willie Brown was told by airport security in San Francisco not to fly that day, as was Salman Rushdie in the United Kingdom. Who told the security authorities at San Francisco Airport to tell Mayor Willie Brown not to fly on 9/11? Now, I'm not suggesting that Mayor Willie Brown knew anything or was a part and parcel with this conspiracy, but somebody told him not to fly on that day, so he stayed home. Well, wasn't that just real special? And then that little factoid got out, which then makes all of us conspiracy theorists say, hey, wait a minute. How come? And over in Great Britain, this guy Salmon, S-A-L-M-O-N, I guess it's pronounced Salmon. I don't know if that A or that L rather is silent or not, but Rushdie, that's the guy that the Iranians have been after trying to assassinate. He lives over in England, and he was told not to fly on 9/11. How come? Now, actually, Brown's claim of a nonspecific airport security call was only a cover. His real source was NSA, and he got the information directly from Condoleezza Rice. So that nice lady who was our Secretary of State, she was the National Security Advisor back in 2001, but later she became Secretary of State. That nice lady knew about this attack before it happened. She happens to be a black lady, and Willie Brown happens to be a black man, and she called Willie Brown and said, hey, Willie, stay off the airplanes today. Isn't that just special? Now, FEMA Urban Rescue Team leader Tom Kenney told a nationwide CBS audience on September the 12th, day after this happened now, quote, we're currently one of the first teams that was deployed to support the city of New York in this disaster. We arrived on late Monday night and went right into action on Tuesday morning. He later said that he misspoke, that he meant Wednesday. But then his first into-action statement became a glaring contradiction. What the hell were you doing in New York in the first place? What do you mean, first into-action? And since that time, he has refused all subsequent requests for clarification. So here's a guy that comes from the government. You see, we're currently one of the first teams that was deployed to support. That's the FEMA, F-E-M-A, Urban Rescue Team, under Tom Kenney. I'm going to put a bracket around that one. He arrived Monday night. He's there a day early, right? Because this event's going to happen at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. And he's been dispatched by FEMA to New York. That means that in order to get him dispatched with his team to New York, somebody had to tell him 2-3 days in advance so that they could pack their bags, don't you think? So that they could be in New York on Monday night, the day before the 9/11 attack. Now, what in the hell is FEMA sending an urban team, an urban disaster team, to New York on Monday night? And then he comes back and says, oops, I made a mistake. I meant Wednesday. Well, and that means then it had to have been dispatched sometime prior to Monday to New York for an event that was going to occur on Tuesday, but, I made a mistake. It wasn't Monday. It meant Wednesday. Well, hell, he was already in New York Monday night. What the hell do you mean Wednesday? You were already there. See where this is coming down? Now, if something like that happens, then it's truly by caprice. You know, maybe FEMA would have sent a training team to New York on Monday, and they just happened to be there when the attack occurred Tuesday morning. It could happen. Well, it's kind of like Pearl Harbor, you know. We know past tense it occurred on December the 7th. And, you know, maybe the president might have dispatched a team and they might have arrived in Pearl Harbor on December the 6th. Maybe. Could happen. But, hey, listen, when the guy comes out over national television and says, we were sent here, we didn't just happen to show up because we were on a training mission. We were sent here. Oh. Why? Now, you know, once or twice, that's fine. But so far, we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. This is the 8th contradiction. This is the 8th accident. Now remember, if you can hit the 6 numbers in the lottery, that's 1 in 83 million. Now we've got 8. That's something more than 1 in 83 million. Hey, we're starting to get suspicious now. And we're just getting started. We're just getting started here, kids. We're going to have a number of random chance here that's going to go out into the trillions here shortly. Listen to this one. Mayor Rudolph Giuliani admitted on air to Peter Jennings that he had advanced warning that the South Tower was going to collapse. He never relayed any such warning to firefighting units on the scene, even though he was in the WTC Building 7 Command Center only hundreds of yards away. So here's Giuliani in the World Trade Center command post in building number 7, the one that later that day was exploded and fell to the ground at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And Silverman, the owner of the complex, says, well, we had to pull the building for the safety of the people involved. Boys and girls, to wire that building took several weeks, and it was done in advance. Don't you think that if you were going to wire a building for demolition, you'd go down and get a permit first? Do you believe that when you're about, you're a demolition company, aren't you? And maybe you're going to be contracted with the Sands Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada, to explode the building and to demolish it. Don't you think that as a contracting company, you should go down to City Hall and pull a permit first? Huh? Now, that building was wired weeks in advance of September the 11th, and it was full of people the whole time. That's the crazy part. I mean, I'm an old-timey general contractor, you know, and I know what it takes to get all of the facilities on site and to get the right people to do the right job and to get them coordinated. It's a hell of a job to get the right people, to get the roofers to putting the roof on at the right time. You can't have the roofers there before the roof rafters and the sheathing's been put on. So, you know, you got to get the rafters put up first, and then you got to get the sheathing put on. Then you got to get the building material company to deliver the 100 square of shingles, and then you got to get the roofing contractor there at the right time to put the shingles on. I mean, it takes a lot of time, effort, and energy to coordinate all these people. And you're telling me that you're going to coordinate the demolition of a 42-story building in 5 hours after it's on fire and during the fires, which is the reason why we're demolishing the building, is because it's on fire and we need to pull the building for the safety of the people around it. Oh, my God. This isn't even credible. You couldn't get a first grader to believe such a preposterous story. This is the government's position, not because they wanted it that way, but because Silverman opened his big mouth and Tom Kenny opened his big mouth, and so now they gotta shut it up. And so now there's people out there putting out these CDs. I've got about 3 or 4 of them here that put this whole thing into slow motion and then put these news events and the reports and these statements made by Giuliani and Silverman and so on right out there in your face. I mean, anybody that sees one of those CDs out there is going to see, oh, my God. Now, this thing has to be orchestrated by government. You can't get 20 guys, you know, from Saudi Arabia to come over here and put all of these events together. They've got to have inside information and training. They've got to have the right stuff at the right time in the right place to pull this off. Now, there's 4 of these airplanes that's being put in on this caper here. So that was Mayor Rudy Giuliani. He opened his mouth and he gave us a little part of the answer. Now let's see how many we got here so far. There's four there, five, six, seven, eight, nine. That's nine. Now here comes number 10. Discrete warnings were given to some WTC CEOs. Now this is World Trade Center. Okay, there's number 10. Now, this World Trade Center is filled with high-level CEOs in business, you know, insiders. And these WTC, this is World Trade Center CEOs, and staff were told to stay home. And additionally, a major business retreat conference was scheduled by Warren Buffett for these major CEOs from New York and elsewhere at Offutt Air Force Base, where the president also went to ride out the affair. Is that a coincidence? Now, let's take a look at this one. Warren Buffett, he's worth about $30 billion. He puts together a conference at Offutt Air Force Base, and he invites the CEOs from the World Trade Center to be there. This is where President Bush ended up after he left Florida. Oh, it's just a coincidence. I'm going to put a bracket around that one. Here's number 11. American and United Airlines stocks were shorted on the options market so someone could benefit from the price drop after 9/11. The options were never cashed in, and the New York Stock Exchange claimed they couldn't trace the trades to anyone. Well, boys and girls, get this. All trades are traceable. How else would they get paid? Now, somebody knew that 9/11 was in the offing, and so they said, well, I'm going to make a little money in the process. So let me short these stocks. And then when this information comes out, then these stocks that are shorted, the price will go down and I'll cash in. Now, that was made public right after this event, right after 9/11, about the 12th or 13th. Somebody spilled the beans and said, hey, we've got a bunch of American Airlines and a bunch of United Airlines stock that's been shorted. And then nobody went in and said, yeah, I'm the short buyer, pay me. They shut that up in short order. Well, that's a pretty glaring gaffe in the whole story, because somebody knew that it was coming. Now, the guy that bought those short sale stocks knew what was coming, didn't he? Otherwise, he wouldn't have bought those specific stocks in those specific airline on that specific day. Come on, guys, let's wake up and smell the coffee here. Now, the World Trade Center was completely shut down, off limits to all tenants, and it was dark during the weekend before 9/11. It had also changed ownership just prior to the attacks with changes in insurance policies. So the stage was set for the planting of controlled demolition charges on the main interior pillars and subsequent recoupling of losses for the new owner. Now, it was shut down for 2 days, that is, prior to 9/11, over the weekend. Silverman had just bought the building, changed the insurance policies, and collected $7 billion. Now, here's another little kicker. The World Trade Center was not full. It had a lot of vacancy factor, and it was losing money. The World Trade Center was a money-losing operation, and it needed to be taken down. And the new owner, Silverman, bought it, changed the insurance, wired it with the demolitions, and then killed all those people. Now, you talk about a guy without conscience, huh? Do you think that he changed the insurance policies and included terrorist attacks accidentally? Do you think he bought those buildings and then closed them down for the weekend prior to 9/11 so that nobody was in the building for 2 days? Do you think that was done by accident? Do you think that they hired a conventional demolition company to come in there and wire those buildings? Or do you think that was the Army demolition, that it was some Army operation, one of these black ops from the CIA? I mean, I don't know all the details, and I don't pretend to, but just looking at these contradictions tells me you can't have 13 contradictions. The chances of those 13 contradictions happening accidentally are 1 in 33 trillion. Got that? 33 trillion. Now, that doesn't happen accidentally. And that's not all of them. As we keep adding to, like the controlled airport screeners and or luggage handlers had to be pre-positioned at the Boston Logan Airport to facilitate getting the weapons on board for the terrorists. The terrorists had both real and fake bombs, a gun, large knives, box cutters, mace, and gas masks on board the airliners. Now, to hide these facts, the 9/11 Commission did selective editing of the flight attendant Amy Sweeney's transcript, who told her airline about these items. None of these could have gotten past normal screening at the airport. Terrorists could not have attained this kind of access to those airplanes by themselves. It could only be arranged by insiders at some higher level. Now, there's another example. Here's the Amy Sweeney transcript. And she says, okay, well, here's what they had. How the hell did they get that on the airplane? Huh? Now, the FBI and Border Customs agents produced the list and the dossiers of the 19 hijackers within hours of the attack. Within hours of the attack, the FBI comes up with the names and pictures of the 19 guys. They don't have the black boxes. They don't have any. Where did they get that evidence? Where did that information come from? I mean, that's almost like methinks thou doth protesteth too much, doesn't it? I mean, the FBI is probably real good, but are they really that good that you can come up with the names and the pictures of the hijackers on the airplanes within hours of the hijackings? Huh? What made you think that it was those Arabs on board that did the hijackings and it wasn't a bunch of Englishmen or Frenchmen or homegrown American terrorists or one lone terrorist on board each of one airplane or the airline pilots themselves? I mean, you know, there's all kinds of possibilities that could come up. To come up with that answer, that pat story, just hours after the event, of and by itself blows the whistle on the conspirators. Methinks thou doth protesteth too much. I think it was Shakespeare came up with that line. Hey, it's halfway time. I got to give you a reminder here that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the appropriate page, and you can download that free 4-hour introductory CD package. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. But these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station, so don't blame any of them. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, now we are reviewing the book Strategic Relocation. This is the section on threat analysis written by Joel Skousen. I'm going to give you his name and address again here. If you're going to write him a letter, you send it to Joel Skousen, J-O-E-L, Skousen, S-K-O-U-S-E-N, at 290 West, 580 South, Orem, Utah, 84058. Let's do that one again slowly. That's 290 West, 580 South, in Orem, O-R-E-M, Utah, U-T-A-H, and that's 84058 is the zip code, 84058. Now, you can call him direct at 801-224-4746. Again, that's area code 801-224-4746. Now, his email address is Joels, J-O-E-L-S. Probably stands for Joel Skousen, J-O-E-L-S, joelskousen.com. That's all one word, joelskousen.com. All right, the book is called Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places. I think that if it's good for your president and the Congress and the Supreme Court and a bunch of other elitists out there to have a four-year supply of food in an underground bunkers, more than one, at taxpayer expense, it probably would be worth Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife just having the information that your public officials believe nuclear bomb war is coming and they're prepared for it, and you paid for their preparation. So I think that it's at least reasonable to warn you that here it comes, get the Vaseline out. Now, remember the official claims here. We didn't know what was coming. Several of the listed hijackers were on government watch lists, yet were nevertheless given visas more than once. Some even held current visas, evidence of either incompetence or prior knowledge and collusion by someone who overrode normal INS procedures. At least one of the aircraft had a large bulging modification on one side, that was Flight 175, whose purpose was unknown. That kind of modification could not have been done by the terrorists, nor could the plane have entered the flight line without being noticed by everyone in the maintenance departments of the airlines. This could be related to the ongoing controversy regarding which gate Flight 11 actually left from. And if another modified plane was inserted on the flight line for that flight as well. Pilot's recording says gate 32, family witness and press said it was gate 26. Now the Pentagon crash evidence, I believe, indicates that the American airliner that hit the Pentagon was laden with explosives throughout the aircraft structure and was blown into small pieces, mostly outside the building. This could not have been done by a suitcase bomb, which would have left major parts of the aircraft intact. The airplane had to be pre-prepped for the job. I never did see the airplane or any parts that came out of the Pentagon. I was suspicious from the beginning that it was never hit by an airliner, it was only hit by the missile. Skousen thinks that the airliner hit the Pentagon, didn't penetrate, blew up because it was specially equipped with explosives, and that a missile hit the building after the fact. Now, I don't know. I wasn't there. I didn't see it. But I wanted to point out that the story that we got from the government doesn't add up. Now, it's understandable that our story doesn't add up because we weren't there, didn't see it, and we don't have all of the evidence. But the government does have all the evidence. There was a parking lot videotape of the entire event, and the FBI came in, scoffed it up. Where is it? And why isn't that being put out? Huh? I mean, surely there's no national security issues involved today, are there? That's why I say they put top secret on this, you know, like the Martin Luther King assassination. They put top secret on his file, his FBI file, for 50 years. Now, what in the hell do we need to keep top secret about Martin Luther King for 50 years? Government put that on there. What's that all about? And you see, every time that government does one of these, then it says to us, well, then they obviously don't want us to know what's in the Martin Luther King file for 50 years. Now, let me give you a little illustration. My granddad, nice guy. My granddad instructed me when I was just a wee lad, and he said, the Germans are a bunch of dirty, rotten, low-down, no-good people. I mean, he came out of World War I, so. And, of course, I'm just a little kid, about 8, 9, 10 years old. Why is that, Granddad? Because those dirty, low-down Germans sank the Lusitania. Oh, no. Yep, that's what they did. My granddad explained this to me. He said they came out there and they torpedoed that ship. And they knew that there was Americans on there, and they knew that was an unarmed passenger ship. That was my granddad saying. That was the official story. The Lusitania was a British merchant ship. It was like the Titanic. It was an ocean-going luxury liner. Now, here's what actually happened. See, my granddad got the official report right out of the newspaper, just like everybody else, that those dirty Germans, this is 1915 now, this is before America got into the war, but we were already being set up for war in 1915. This is about April or May now, 1915. Those dirty Germans sank that ship, and they knew that it was unarmed, and it was just full of Americans and passengers and innocent civilians, and then they did it on purpose, and they're just dirty, low-down, no-good murderers and so on. Now, that was the official story. Now, here's what the real story was, because that sinking was classified as top secret, and it wasn't revealed until 1967 what actually happened. So here from the American top secret files, here's what happened. The Lusitania was loaded with munitions. And not just American munitions that were bought off the counter and being clandestinely smuggled into England. These were specific munitions which were manufactured by munitions companies in Fort Wayne, Indiana, which were the specific calibers to fit the specific guns of the British Army, manufactured here in the United States in secret locations, and then transferred to New York and loaded on the Lusitania. Now, the Germans are not dumb people, and the German government was not staffed by a bunch of incompetents. See, they got spies everywhere, and German spies figured this out. And so the Germans are sitting here. They're in kind of a quandary. Here's the United States, which says we are officially neutral, secretly making arms for the British and seeking and sending them over to England on passenger ships. They're not shipping them over there on military or freighters. They're shipping them over there on passenger liners. It's kind of like the Arab terrorists hiding in mosques. See? Okay. So it wasn't the Arab terrorists that came up with that plan. It was the English and the Americans discovered that clear back in World War I. Now, my granddad gets the official version that the Germans sank an unarmed passenger liner, killed a bunch of civilians, and they're a bunch of Huns for doing that. And then here's the Germans who published in five American newspapers these findings. And they said, now, the Lusitania is going to sail here on thus and such a date. And when it sails, it's going to be loaded with a bunch of munitions. And if we find that ship out on the high seas, we are going to torpedo it. We're going to sink it because it's an enemy combatant ship. And they're hauling munitions on it. It'd be kind of like hiding munitions on a white ship with a red cross on it. You know, you're only supposed to have casualties on there. You're not supposed to be sneaking bullets and munitions and armaments, you know. And then those are declared neutral ships, and then we don't sink them. Well, we don't sink passenger liners. But the Germans came up and they said, listen, that ship ain't loaded with just passengers. It's got munitions. And they warned people. They said, don't buy a ticket on that boat, because if we find it out there, we're going to sink it. And they found it, and they sank it. Now, the passengers didn't know that, most of them probably. And, of course, the government denies it, just like President Eisenhower. Remember when they shot down, remember when the Russians shot down that U-2 plane with Gary Powers? Remember what our official response was? Oh, no, we didn't do that. We don't know anything about it. So governments lie constantly. And, of course, if it's our government lying, that's okay because that's our guys. It's the Russians that are the bad guys. Now, look, when you're flying the U-2 over Russian territory, what would you think? Let's put the shoe on the other foot. What would you think if the Russians were flying their U-2 over New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles? If we can shoot it down, we're going to. Well, the Russians got to a point in time when they could shoot it down, and they did. So don't think for a moment that governments don't lie. And they lie to cover up their clandestine acts. And this was a clandestine act, and the Germans caught them with their arms in the cookie jar up to their elbows. And so as a result of that, now this black operation's been going on for a long time. So the destruction of the American fleet in Pearl Harbor was one of those black operations. Our government knew in advance. We broke the Japanese code. But here's the point. They classify it top secret for 50 years. Now, my granddad died in 1951. This information wasn't put out till 1967. My granddad went to his grave believing the lies that the government put out in 1915. And most of you people will go to your graves believing the lies that the government put out concerning Kennedy and Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King and the World Trade Center, because it's been classified for 50 years. That's the way they hide it. Then 50 years later, you know, 50 years from 1915, about 1967, as I recall, it was put out. I read it in the newspapers, and I said, oh, my God, my granddad told me this story. And he went to his grave believing that that ship was unarmed. But now we have fessed up after 50 years. And now we're telling the next generation, well, yeah, it was a lie. But we needed to do that to defeat these bad guys, the Germans. You follow that? All right, now, when we talk about these official claims, the FBI and other agencies did their best to investigate these terrorist cells. Contradictions. Here's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six contradictions. The chances of that happening are 83 million to one. Official claim. Osama bin Laden and his Al-Qaeda terrorist network were responsible for the attack. The CIA, with the help of Pakistan's ISI, sponsored the rise of Al-Qaeda in order to free Afghanistan from Soviet domination. But bin Laden turned against his Western benefactors, and the United States has been hunting bin Laden and his top leaders with all of their might. Contradictions. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six contradictions. That's 83 million to one that happened that way. And then let me just hit a contradiction or two here. Both the governments of Sudan during the Clinton administration and the Taliban during the current Bush administration offered to turn bin Laden over to the U.S., and they were refused. Why, if bin Laden really had turned against the CIA? Here's another kicker. Bin Laden is a CIA agent. Now, do you remember this guy, Manuel Noriega? He was the president of Panama. And we went down to Panama and we captured Manuel Noriega down there, brought him back to the United States, and then we prosecuted him. As far as I know, he's still in prison. He might be out by now. This happened way back when. But listen, what's going on here, boys and girls, is that Manuel Noriega, CIA agent. Lee Harvey Oswald, CIA agent. Osama bin Laden, CIA agent. Now, here's a little trick. These agents, when they become agents in the CIA or in MI6, they swear an oath to the Queen, you know, or to the United States or whatever. And they do that for life. See, once you join the CIA, you're not joining for 20 years or 30 years for your professional career. You join for life. You're an agent forever. You're going to die an agent. And you sign a contract and you say, I promise that I will never reveal any of the secrets of the CIA or MI6 or the agency that I'm involved in. Forever. So these agents, when they want to write their memoirs, they have to submit them to the agency to have them approved. And so the bottom line to this is that these agents, once they join up, they're under contract, and if they violate their confidentiality, then they'll go after them. Now, bin Laden is a CIA asset. I suspect that he is a CIA asset to this day. Remember, he's never been captured. He's the bad guy. He's the bogeyman. He's the object of our intention. We're after bin Laden. We're just working heart and soul to catch this guy. Well, now, listen. This guy, Osama bin Laden, went into a hospital, and he was available for capture. It was bought and paid for. The hospital bill bought and paid for by the CIA, and they never touched him. If they wanted to capture him, they could have captured him anytime they wanted to. Now, it may be that today they can't capture him. I mean, he might be sitting over there saying, hey, I'm being set up here as the patsy, like Lee Harvey Oswald, and he escaped. Maybe bin Laden's a little smarter than we gave him credit for. But they got a $25 million. I think they just raised that now to $50 million, a reward. See, $25 or $50 million for his capture is designed to have somebody who's, you know, like his son or daughter or mother or father or wife or cousin or closest associates will turn him in for the money. You know, that's a lot of bread. And it seems to me they just doubled it from $25 to $50 million. That's to get his closest associates to turn him in. I don't doubt but what the United States government would like to capture him. It would be a great propaganda coup. And then somebody would kill him, or he would die shortly thereafter, just like Lee Harvey Oswald. And that's the way this game is played. Now, we've seen this played over and over and over and over again. If it happened once, we'd say it was an accident. And if it happened twice, we'd say it was a coincidence. Boys and girls, this doesn't happen once or twice. It happens over and over and over. And when it happens over and over 6 times, that's 1 in 83 million. When it happens 13 times, it's 1 in 33 trillion. And it isn't just with the Kennedy assassination or with just bin Laden or with just Vince Foster or just Whitewater or just Iran-Contra or just, my God, there's 20 or 30 of these events that are being covered. And the chances of that happening accidentally is 1 in 33 trillion. That's why we believe in conspiracy. You see, we don't believe that you can throw 12 buttons out of a moving automobile and that they'll all fall on the pavement and arrange themselves in neat rows of three, four long, time after time after time after time. We do not believe that you can pick out six numbers and win the lottery. We don't believe that you can pick out six numbers and win the lottery time after time after time after time after time accidentally by caprice. That's why we believe in the conspiracy theory. Because mathematically it's impossible. And that's just one reason. Now, the contradictions that go on here, like the government officials tried their best to react to the attack as it occurred, or the official claim that Osama bin Laden and his Al-Qaeda terrorist network were responsible for the attack, or the official claim that the FBI and other agencies did their best to investigate these terrorist cells, or the official claim that no prior warning or knowledge of the events and no way to predict them. You know, these are claims that the government made, and there are contradictions to these claims, time after time after time. The official claim, for instance, that four airliners were involved and were hijacked by these 19 alleged hijackers listed by the FBI. The hijackers used box cutters smuggled on board through normal security procedures. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 contradictions to that claim. Here's official claim number 6. Too good to be true evidence surrounding the hijackers. Listen, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Let's see if I turn the page here. 5 contradictions. Official claim number 7. The World Trade Center towers collapse. The government claims both towers collapsed solely due to fire damage resulting from the aircraft collisions. Oh my God. The contradictions. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 12. Not quite 1 in 33 trillion that those towers collapsed. Now, listen, this is what this means statistically. You could do that World Trade Center trick 33 trillion times before you could get it to come out the way that they claim it did, that they collapsed from the heat from those airliners, the jet fuel. And I would bet you could do it 33 trillion times and you couldn't come up with one. Those buildings were exploded, pure and simple. Well, that's the story. Official claim after official claim refuted by contradictions from eyewitnesses and photographs and pictures time after time after time to numbers like 83 million to 33 trillion. And it's not just 1, 2, 5, or 7. It's 8, 9 official claims. Let me see how many more there are here. 10 official claims, all refuted. How do you like that? And that's all in Joel Skousen's book. Remember, it's called Strategic Relocation, Joel M. Skousen. Telephone number 801-224-4746. And his email number is joels@joelskousen.com. That's why we believe in the conspiracy theory. Time's up. I got to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the law school, the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.